The U.S. Commerce Secretary puts a timeline on when the U.S. will bolster economic cooperation in the Indo-Pacific region. Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Victoria Craig. Good morning. At a summit today in Singapore, Gino Raimondo said that at the start of 2022, the Biden administration is likely to launch a formal process into building out an economic framework for the Indo-Pacific. The White House says the goal is to find shared objectives for trade, bolster supply chain resiliency, and define standards around technology and the digital economy. The BBC's Saranjana Tiwari spoke to the U.S. Commerce Secretary and asked whether the new framework is designed to work with China or hold it accountable on a number of issues.
That's the big question. The CPTPP, that idea that the U.S. came up with, was originally to counter the influence of China in the region. But now the U.S. is saying it might not join it, especially because China has asked to join it as well. And the U.S. might build its own economic framework. But there was a clear message to China from Secretary Raimondo, and that is that China needs to play by the rules and that the U.S. will work with its allies in the region in order to ensure that.
There's a difference between trying to grow and engaging in anti-competitive, coercive activities. And there's a pretty clear line. Stealing trade secrets, stealing IP, global distortion of markets, human rights violations, that's not trying to grow. And so America has to work with our allies in every way, because that's good for the region and it's good for our economy.
Saranjana, just yesterday, Presidents Biden and Xi held a three-hour phone call and they touched on trade issues, but the discussion there was brief. You asked Ms. Raimondo about how the U.S. plans to hold China accountable for not so far honoring its phase one trade deal commitments. What did she say about that?
That's right. And, you know, in our discussions with counterparts in the region, trade was a hot topic. I did ask her about the status of the phase one trade commitments and whether China is sticking to them. And she said, no, they're not. And all that they can do is apply some pressure. She used the example of Boeing airplanes. She had accused China's government of blocking Chinese airlines from buying American equipment that American businesses really want to sell. And she used that as a clear example of China not playing by the rules, not sticking to its commitments. And she said that the U.S. trade representative, Catherine Tai, was also in the region at the moment in order to ensure that China does stick to what it promised.
Now, while the talk is on economic cooperation regionally and globally, the U.S. Commerce Secretary did discuss a need to focus on homegrown innovation and production, too, didn't she?
That's right. You know, with the supply chain, this global supply chain crisis going on, it's really shone the light on the weaknesses in the global supply chain and America's reliance on Asia for basic things like semiconductors.
It is certainly true that we need to increase domestic production of semiconductors. There's no doubt about that. It's a global supply chain. It's enormously complex. It is global, necessarily global, and always will be. But we also need to incentivize more increased domestic production of semiconductors. Some of it was just, we just took our eye off the ball. You know, for example, in semiconductors, in search of cheap labor, we lost a lot of our manufacturing. You know, not that long ago, the U.S. produced 40% of the world's semiconductors. We're down to 12%. So over a period of decades, we allowed that manufacturing to leave our shores, and we have to, you know, reinvest.
Now, she did say that the Biden administration was working to pour more investment into the U.S., but of course, that will take time.
The BBC's Saranjana Tiwari for us in Singapore. Thanks so much for your time this morning.
Thank you.
Checking the numbers now as European benchmarks tick higher. Fresh UK inflation figures are weighing on London's FTSE 100. Inflation here surged to a 10-year high of 4.2% from a year ago. That's well above the Bank of England's target, and policymakers say they may have to raise rates in the coming months to tackle rising prices. Meanwhile, the European Central Bank said low COVID-19 vaccination rates are posing a risk to financial stability. Just under 65% of the population is double vaccinated, and the bank warned further restrictions are one of the main risks to economic growth. A BBC investigation found two of the world's most wanted cybercrime suspects are living freely in Russia, despite the Kremlin's claims it doesn't shelter hackers. The two men have been sanctioned by Washington, but they appear to be living luxurious lifestyles. The BBC's Joe Tidy has more from Moscow.
With a $5 million bounty for his arrest, Maxim Yakubets and his right-hand man Igor Turashev are the two most wanted alleged hackers in the world. They allegedly lead cybercrime crew EvilCor, stealing or extorting more than $100 million from victims in 40 different countries. In videos from social media, the crew are seen driving luxury cars and playing with a pet lion cub. Working with Andrei Zakharov, BBC Russia's cyber reporter, we found contact details and addresses for them in Moscow and beyond. Igor Turashev runs businesses in Federation Tower, one of the most prestigious addresses in Moscow. The building receptionist said there was no number linked to the offices, but she found a mobile number under his name. After a long wait, whoever answered said they worked for one of Turashev's businesses and was going to give us another number until Andrei told them where we're from. Maxim Yakubets appears to be living the high life too. His wedding was lavish and cost at least $500,000. A promotional video of the spectacular day was posted online by a production company that filmed it. After multiple attempts to connect online, we tried addresses in his name in Moscow. At one of them, we found his father.
Nice to meet you.
His words are spoken by a colleague.
He hasn't been here for probably 15 years. When an American court unfoundedly declares a person guilty in hacking, where is the evidence?
How do you think your son has become so rich? What is his line of work? What does he do?
Why should I tell it to you? To let you make it public and to make him persecuted in the area of his other profession?
The US evidence against Yakubets and his crew is made up of testimony from former gang members, cyber forensics data, and even communications from Yakubets' personal email address. Some evidence from 2010 comes directly from the Russian police, back when they were open to helping investigate Yakubets. At their spring summit, President Biden said he brought up the issue of harboring cyber criminals with President Putin. Putin denied that it was a Russia problem, but said he would work with the US. The talks have yet to bear significant fruit. Many experts say Russia needs to play its part too to turn the tide on organized crime in cyberspace.
That's Joe Tidy reporting from Moscow there. Now, the BBC asked the Russian government to comment on the fact that hackers seem to operate freely in Russia, but we've received no reply. In London, I'm Victoria Craig with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.